The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Listening to the top of the program there reminded me of a few, some feedback we got from some of our listeners in Florida who really enjoy the announcer that we have in London. He comes from London. He's not a member of the church, but he's been doing a great job for us ever since we started the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Well, yesterday was the 2-year anniversary of the mass killing in Las Vegas 2 years ago, October 1st. And as someone tweeted out, someone in the news media, we still don't know very much about the killer in that particular mass shooting. And of course, it was a little bit different than some of the others that we've seen. Because the targets, a lot of them were, they were at a country music festival, I believe it was. So probably a little bit more of a conservative audience, but lots of mysteries surrounding that. I remember the event because we were down in Australia at the time and actually recorded a program in advance. We couldn't do it live down there, but because of that, I tried to make some time for the radio program down under. But why don't we know more about this killer? It's a good question that individual tweeted out. Well, this week, speaking of anniversaries, this is Communist China's 70th anniversary. They celebrated that yesterday. So for the communists, it was a big celebration. In Hong Kong, however, there, as I think you might have heard at the top of the hour, there's been mass protesting, lots of violence. One protester was shot in the chest. I think the first to be injured by a live round of ammunition. Police arrested something like 200 protesters. Usually they've been using rubber bullets, but as I say, there has been some live fire as well. Some of the protesters have turned out with weapons themselves to fight the police. This is from The Spectator. It says there's been a tragic escalation of tensions in Hong Kong. Has become a tinderbox. The explosion of anger today should be condemned, but it is the result, listen to this, it's the result of the brutal actions of the authorities to what were initially peaceful protests. It is particularly worrying to see some reports that China has doubled the number of troops in Hong Kong to 12,000. So you can see, if your eyes are open to what's happening, you see what's going on here. It's starting in Hong Kong, and it'll continue on to Taiwan later. It's important to understand how frightened it must be to live in Hong Kong today. How frightening, rather. It says, if you were one of the 2 million people in a region of 7 million who have been on the streets over the last 100 days to demand basic human rights and universal suffrage, there's a good chance that you would have seen your friends and family beaten, sprayed with tear gas, and arbitrarily arrested. There's a good chance you've seen this. It's just 7 million people there, and an estimated 2 million have taken to the streets. This is in Hong Kong. One of the jewels, it used to be one of the jewels of the British Empire. We had a lot to say about that. In the 1990s, some 20 years ago, the Hong Kong handover and where this would lead. It says those taking part in legitimate protests have had to wear masks for fear of being kidnapped and taken to mainland China for a prearranged show trial. That's life under the communist government, under the communist dictator, President Xi. He has total power. Total power. Another news source, it just gave details of this young man who traveled from the mainland over to Hong Kong to participate in the protests. encouraging the protesters, "Don't give up, fight on for freedom." And then when he returned to the mainland, the police abruptly arrested him, threatened to put him to death if he didn't stop disrupting things. And then you have these reports, as I said at the top, of China increasing its troops, or the number of troops there, 12,000. This report says, if Xi manages to break the will of Hong Kong, there can be little doubt that he will cast his gaze across the Taiwan Strait for his next target. Pro-democracy lawmaker, this is Ray Chan, he said, Hong Kong and Taiwan are both at the front line of the global fight to stop Beijing's creeping authoritarianism and control. That's what's happening. Creeping authoritarianism. We've seen it in the South China Sea all during the Obama years. And the U.S. did nothing about it. President Obama, Vice President Biden, nothing. In a lot of ways, they encouraged it. They looked the other way. Our cooperation and mutual support, it says, will be key to defending our freedom. That's quoting from that pro-democracy lawmaker. Let me give you a quote from what my father wrote not that long ago. He said, China is intimidating the nations of Southeast Asia into submission to its will. It's forcing these countries to do what it wants. Everything is headed in the direction of war. And so we're seeing this push, this pushiness now in Hong Kong. It's on display, it seems, every day. And I think that individual's take, I forget who it was that we quoted. First it's Hong Kong, and then it's over to Taiwan. So that's what's happening. I thought it was interesting just listening to this NPR clip. They're on hand. China didn't let too many Western news sources in, but they were happy to let NPR come in. I wonder why. They invited NPR in, and there's this reporter on the scene. She's giving a firsthand account of how it is in China today, 70 years on since the communists took over. They were celebrating that yesterday. Here's a little bit from that NPR report, clip 5.
What I wanted to take a look at on this trip were what promises did the Chinese Communist Party make 70 years ago? And what promises have they made good on, basically? Because, you know, in a lot of ways, the CCP is a party of contradictions. It was once the party of revolution. It's now become the establishment here. Yeah. It's communist in name, but it is not the party of the proletariat. It's the party of state capitalism. And it's a party that promised to lift people out of poverty, which, you know, truth be told, it has done a spectacular job of. In fact, it's lifted hundreds of millions of people out of poverty.
Yeah, the communists have done a spectacular job for 70 years. That's from the NPR. That's the Western press. That's the American press. Just raving about the Chinese government, President Xi. And that's some of the reporting that you get from the radical left wing. That just seems to love the dictators, except the ones that they try to say that are in cahoots with Donald Trump. Now, those are the ones they don't like. But you know the track record. You saw it for 8 years before Donald Trump ever came along. All the nice things to say about Cuba and China, Russia, the reset button. We'll get more flexibility. Once I get through the re-election, President Obama told Medvedev. That's just been the track record. I mentioned this article yesterday. It was actually, I think, in Monday's New York Times. But the one about now they're trying to say the Trump administration is reaching out to the Australian leader to help Barr investigate how the Mueller investigation got off, or the Trump-Russia collusion hoax got off to a start 3 years ago. And I know this is a couple days old, but just in going through this article again yesterday. There are a lot of interesting details brought out in this New York Times piece, and I think it does, in a sense, it does reveal why the radical left is so concerned about what's happening, why they're pushing back so hard with this new narrative, Trump supposedly pressuring the president of Ukraine. And now it's Australia, so we see a pattern. There's an established pattern, and so he has to be impeached. He must be impeached. The Times wrote, this is from Monday, President Trump pushed the Australian Prime Minister during a recent telephone call to help Attorney General William P. Barr gather information for a Justice Department inquiry that Mr. Trump hopes will discredit the Mueller investigation, according to two American officials with knowledge of the call. Here again, just like we've pointed out with the Zelensky call, this is going backward. This is going back to the origins of the Russia-Trump collusion investigation. He wants to get to the bottom of this. And he's made no secret of the fact that he has asked. He has asked even other nations to cooperate with this investigation. Just a little while ago, of course, the Democrats were all for a wide open investigation into what happened in 2016. Now they don't want anything to be investigated. It says the White House curbed access to a transcript of the call, which the president, as if the transcripts of these calls should just be openly available to everyone. After the leaks, there have already been leaks of phone conversations that the president had with the leader of Australia, Philippines, and now Ukraine. How many, as I said yesterday, how many leaks were there of any phone conversations that Barack Obama ever had with anyone? I can't even remember one. It says now they're just coming out almost weekly. Here's another communication. And really, the New York Times makes it seem like it's this big explosive revelation, according to these two American officials. But I think it was Fox News on Bret Baier's show, maybe last night or the night before, where he pointed out that, look, even in an open interview, President Trump has said, yes, we're talking to leaders from these countries because we really want to find out how that this Russia collusion hoax got off to the start that it did. So it's not like this is something that the Trump administration has kept hidden. It says the White House curbed access to a transcript of the call, which the president made at Mr. Barr's request to a small group of aides. One of the officials said the restriction was unusual and similar to the handling of a July call with the Ukrainian president. So here again, what they're implying is that it was a cover up. It's a cover up to try to keep these conversations confidential. It says further on, the discussion with Mr. Morrison shows the extent to which Mr. Trump views the attorney general as a crucial partner. The president is using federal law enforcement powers to aid his political prospects, settle scores. This is the New York Times. Settle scores with his perceived deep state enemies and show that the Mueller investigation had corrupt partisan origins. Now, the last bit of it's right. That's what he's looking into. But then they're making this great leap to say that he's just settling scores or that he really wants to help his chances in 2020. I think I liked, who was it? Sarah Huckabee Sanders, maybe, who came out and said, or maybe it was Kellyanne Conway. She came out and said that, you know, we don't need any help to beat Joe Biden in 2020. We'll take care of that just fine. But they do want to investigate how this Trump-Russia collusion hoax got started. It says the Justice Department inquiry and a parallel but unconnected effort by the president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, represented a kind of two-front war. Mr. Trump has said that Mr. Barr can help him validate his 2016 electoral victory. And Mr. Giuliani has been trying to unearth damaging information about Vice President Joe Biden Jr., in anticipation of the 2020 race. Well, there has been a lot of questions that Mr. Giuliani has raised regarding Vice President Biden and the quid pro quo from 2016 and the firing of Shokin and Hunter Biden on the board of Burisma, even when he had no experience in that field, $50,000 per month, $3 million in total over the course of 3 or 4 years. It says, as part of his efforts, listen to this, as part of his efforts, Mr. Barr, now, if you've been watching the news, you see the attorney general's coming under attack now as well. Eric Holder, of all people, President Obama's wingman, he came out and said that Mr. Barr's crossed a line. He's no longer objective. So, and there's people saying he should recuse himself from all of these things that he's involved in. But the New York Times says here, Mr. Barr in recent months has asked the president to facilitate communications with foreign officials and has made at least one trip to Italy to secure cooperation, according to a department official. The inquiry is examining American intelligence and law enforcement activity around the Trump campaign and whether it was legal. So he's in Italy, which is interesting. And, of course, Italy was involved. Mifsud, of course, the UK was involved. Australia was involved. I'm talking about those that were involved in the Mueller investigation. Those nations that were involved in spying on the Trump administration or the Trump campaign back in 2016. The New York Times says Mr. Trump initiated the discussion with Mr. Morrison in recent weeks explicitly for the purpose of requesting Australia's help in the review. So Mr. Barr's travel to Italy, Mr. Trump's requesting help from the Ukrainian president. Again, looking back at 2016 and then now asking for help from the president of Australia or the prime minister of Australia. Listen to Brooke Baldwin, the question she asks on CNN, I think yesterday, clip six.
Do you find Bill Barr's travels problematic? And in your decades with the agency, have you ever heard of anything like this?
She's asking that of Andrew McCabe. Andrew McCabe, who is already guilty of lying under oath. He is a CNN commentator. He comes right from the Obama deep state. And this is Brooke Baldwin asking Andrew McCabe if he finds it problematic that Bill Barr would travel. That Bill Barr would travel to Italy. Why would he be doing this? She says to Andy McCabe. And this is how McCabe responded, clip seven.
No, I sure haven't heard of anything like this. There's two primary questions that I think you have to ask here. The first is, why is he doing this at all? The circumstances behind the opening of the Russia case are not a mystery. I have testified under oath about them as early as December of 2017. Jim Comey has made comments about them publicly. I have. We've both written books that touched on the issues. Mm-hmm. So it's the circumstances behind the case are widely known. They were entirely validated by the special counsel investigation. We now know that Russia did try to attack our elections and that the president did engage in numerous acts of potentially obstructive conduct. So it raises that question of what are we doing here?
That's the Obama people, of course, saying, why are we even investigating this? We've already written about this in our books. We've already told you why we had to investigate Donald Trump. I mean, it was obvious. Well, of course, we now know that the big Mueller investigation turned out to be a total flop. And so the tables have turned and you have the Trump investigators looking into how this got started in the first place. And so this is what's driving a lot of the desperate acts of the last week and a half. The desperation, you can see it, on the part of the deep state, if we can call it that. It says further on in this New York Times piece, the Justice Department said last week that law enforcement officials were exploring the extent to which other countries, including Ukraine, played a role in the counterintelligence investigation directed at the Trump campaign. At the very least, Mr. Barr has made clear that he sees his work treading into delicate territory. How closely allies law enforcement and intelligence agencies share information with American officials. They were doing that. It was wide open. The Australian diplomat that reported, you know, the conversation or what he overheard from Papadopoulos. You know all the connections. I don't need to review that here. Between the UK, Italy, Israel factored in, Greece, Australia. They loved getting help from others. When the investigation was aimed at Donald Trump, they loved it. They used it. They used it frequently. But they don't want, now that the investigation didn't work out, the Mueller probe, they do not want Donald Trump contacting other countries. They can't see how that this should be done. What are we doing here? Says Andy McCabe. It says here in the New York Times, current and former Justice Department officials said that it would be neither illegal nor untoward for Mr. Trump to ask world leaders to cooperate with Mr. Barr, and it's within Mr. Barr's powers to speak with foreign law enforcement officials about his prosecutor's need. So there's nothing illegal about this. There's nothing really unusual about this. Yet the radical left, they are screaming because they know that Mr. Barr and they know that John Durham in these investigations, they know they're about to reveal a lot of evil activity, a lot of illegal activity. It says here, others criticized Mr. Barr's active role in the Durham inquiry. It would be extremely unusual for the Attorney General to be this personally involved in any investigation, let alone one where his personal integrity has already come under question. That's reporting from a spokesman who worked for the Obama administration. So it is a cold civil war, what we're seeing. Just like the radio commentator Rush Limbaugh said last week. I mentioned that yesterday. A fight between two Justice Departments. And, of course, there's still a lot of holdovers currently in the DOJ and the FBI from the Obama era. Some of them have been removed and have since gone on to CNN and MSNBC. A cold civil war. It says finally in this article, the report by the special counsel who completed the Russia investigation, Robert Mueller, confirmed that Australia played a central role in the origins of the original FBI inquiry, but like so much about the pre-election period, the episode has been the subject of a counter-narrative marbled with conspiracy that the Obama administration dispatched the Australian official Alexander Downer to spy on the Trump campaign as part of a broader effort to help Mrs. Clinton get elected. Well, that's worth looking into. That's worth looking into. It's being investigated by Barr and Durham, and Mr. Trump wants that. The New York Times says, days afterward, Australia's ambassador, well, that just gets into a few other details regarding that history. This is what President Trump tweeted yesterday. He says, as I learn more and more each day, I'm coming to the conclusion that what is taking place is not an impeachment. He's referring to all of this nonsense about the call with the Ukrainian president. He says, this is not an impeachment. It's a coup intended to take away the power of the people, their vote, their freedoms, their Second Amendment, religion, military, border wall, and their God-given rights as citizens of the United States of America. That's what he tweeted out just yesterday. pretty strong criticism coming from President Trump. Ukraine is the latest narrative. But in truth, this has been something that they've wanted the moment that President Trump was elected, going back to November of 2016, Newsbusters put together this montage, and you can't see it, obviously, if you're just listening on the stream, but on YouTube, you'll see from one comment to the next, it's starting in November of 2016, this push for impeachment, and then each comment just takes you 1 month ahead, November 2016, then December, then January of 2017, and all the way through to today. It's been impeach, impeach, impeach. Here's the montage, clip one.
If he takes the risk of going to trial and he's convicted, that could be seen as an impeachable offense.
If Trump were caught on a video camera snorting cocaine in the White House, maybe with one of his children, there was at least a chance he'd be impeached.
If he's not a legitimately elected president in your mind, there are tools that Congress has.
I don't see how that wouldn't be an impeachable offense.
That tweet fits the Republican definition of an impeachable offense more fully than what Bill Clinton was actually impeached for.
Impeachment is very difficult.
Grounds for impeachment.
It's an impeachable offense.
Perhaps impeachable offense.
Is impeachment the appropriate remedy?
Something through the Congress like impeachment.
All of that may be impeachable.
That's an impeachable offense.
Is that an impeachable offense?
Is that an impeachable offense to you?
He's much more vulnerable to impeachment.
A potential ingredient of impeachment.
Where do you see an impeachable offense?
It is grounds for impeachment.
Potentially criminal or even impeachable.
Grounds for impeachment, or does that not go far enough in your view?
Grounds for impeachment. This tweet alone may be an impeachable offense.
Let's talk about impeachment.
Impeachment is on the table.
Which impeachable offense is
an impeachable offense?
Do you see an impeachable set of offenses?
It's an impeachable offense.
If that's not impeachable, I don't know what is.
The president shall be removed from office on impeachment.
Is it impeachable?
100%. Is impeachable.
Very substantial evidence that the president is guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors.
Grounds for impeachment.
Tipping point. Talk of impeachment reaches a fever pitch on Capitol Hill. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, under growing pressure from her own party.
Here we go again.
Here we go again, says the president. All from November 2016, every single month, the news media hyperventilating. Hopeful. Tweets. How many tweets are impeachable offenses? He should have been impeached before he even came into office, says your news media in the United States. Yesterday, it was reported that the Trump campaign raised $125 million in the third quarter of this calendar year. $125 million of campaign financing, donations coming from Trump supporters. So you have on the one side the people that hate him, that say he should be impeached and convicted from day one. And then you have the enthusiastic supporters that are sending him a ton of money. That's just one quarter. That's 1 3-month period. And we're still more than a year out from the election. $125 million. Well, you go back to that New York Times story, and the reason it's obviously it's written from the left-wing perspective, but what's fascinating about it is just the details that are revealed here and there of why they're concerned, why they're worried on the left. Listen to John Solomon, the reporter at The Hill. This was on Fox News, one of the shows last evening, clip two.
There is a media narrative that is false. How do we know it's false? Because the documents I possess show it is false. So let's start with one of my favorites. This was Katie Turr on Friday night, and many others across the weekend said, there is no evidence that the Ukraine embassy was ever asked for help in Washington to help the Democratic National Committee. In fact, Katie Turr called it on NBC News. She called that Russian propaganda, that claim. Now, you showed the Politico article. I have a statement from the Ukrainian embassy in Washington on the record from their sitting ambassador in Washington that, in fact, Alexandra Chalupa, the DNC contractor, came to the Ukraine embassy in spring 2016 and asked for help in finding dirt on Donald Trump in hopes of staging a congressional hearing to hurt Donald Trump in the fall election of 2016. That is the Ukraine embassy's on-the-record statement. In addition, they state that Ms. Chalupa also asked for the Ukraine president to visit the United States and spend time with an investigative reporter trying to turn up dirt on Donald Trump and Paul Manafort. What did the embassy do? They say they recognized this request for what it was, an improper effort to influence the election, and they refused to cooperate with Ms. Chalupa.
That's John Solomon saying that this is on record. This is what the Ukraine embassy has reported. And so in a lot of ways, the Biden investigation or the investigation or lack thereof into his son, it's somewhat of a distraction because this is what the Democrats are really concerned about. They don't want President Trump's investigators talking to Ukrainian officials. They don't want them talking to Italian officials. They don't want them talking to Australian officials. Because they're guilty. They are guilty of the very things they're accusing Donald Trump of. This is a Congressman Devin Nunes last night also on Fox, clip 3.
There's a couple things that I think your audience also needs to know about, and that is that this is not a real impeachment. Okay, this is like a faux impeachment. What they're doing is by keeping this at the House Intelligence Committee, we're not built. The House Intelligence Committee is not a place to run impeachment hearings. So what they're trying to do is they're hiding this from the American people. They don't want the normal process. And as Mark just pointed out, it's important for people to go back and look at what the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee did. He fabricated the president's own words. And as Mark, this needs a closer examination. The Democrats tried to get dirt from the Ukrainians. The DNC, the Clinton campaign, the origins of the Russian investigation begin in Ukraine.
That's Congressman Devin Nunes telling you that the origins of the Russian investigation, the Mueller probe, they begin in Ukraine. And now it's being exposed. It says here at the Wall Street Journal, little notice has been given. It sets it up by talking about the whistleblower and the phone conversation, the transcript, and so on. But then the journal says, little notice has been given to another document lying in plain sight, a Justice Department press release issued the day the conversation transcript became public. So the same day that the transcript with the phone conversation between Mr. Trump and Zelensky. It says that Justice Department statement makes explicit that the president never spoke with Attorney General William Barr about having Ukraine investigate anything relating to former Vice President Biden or his son, or asked him to contact Ukraine on this or any other matter, and that the Attorney General has not communicated at all with Ukraine. It also contains the following morsel. Listen to this. A Department of Justice team led by U.S. Attorney John Durham is separately exploring the extent to which a number of countries, including Ukraine, played a role in the counterintelligence investigation directed at the Trump campaign during the 2016 election. It says, while the Attorney General has yet to contact Ukraine in connection with this investigation, certain Ukrainians who are not members of the government have volunteered information to Mr. Durham, which he is evaluating. So they're digging. They're digging and they're turning up some evidence, some facts. We're starting to see the paper trail being revealed. Reports from the Ukrainian embassy. Cooperation now from the Ukrainian president. From Italy. From Australia. This is the deep state, as I say, being exposed. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Today we'll conclude our series on God's holy and just and perfect law, as we've been discussing over the last few programs that I have, or that I've been able to get into this. Isn't it time to look into the Bible and to see what God says about his law instead of taking someone else's word for it? Look into the Bible. We've been looking into it. We've been reading through some beautiful verses. In the book of James, for example, I went through chapter 1 or the end of it at the end of the program yesterday. But if you look into chapter 2, verse 8, James 2, verse 8 says, if you fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. You do well. Fulfill the royal law. It's not just holy and just and perfect and pure. It's royal as well. God's royal family, administering his royal family government. Upholding the royal laws of God. Thayer says, of or belonging to a king, kingly, royal, or regal. That's New Testament. The royal law of God. James continues, but if you have respect to persons, you commit sin and are convinced of the law as transgressors. For whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend in one point, he is guilty of all. Do you hear these verses quoted often in the churches of today? God says, if you break one, you've broken them all. Matthew 5:19 says, whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven, as we've been saying, as the Bible's been saying over and again. We have to be doers. Do and teach them. You can add to that hearing, doing, and teaching even. We're coming up to the Feast of Tabernacles. We're going to be hearing a lot, those of us in God's church. We're going to be hearing a lot about teaching. I got into it somewhat at Trumpets. Just how much this world needs qualified teachers, leaders, people in government, experts in the laws of God. Well, what law is James talking about here in James 2? He says the royal law. He says if you offend in one point, you're guilty of all. And then he elaborates further in verse 11, for he that said, do not commit adultery, said also, do not kill. Now, if you commit no adultery, yet if you kill, you are become a transgressor of the law. So he's obviously referring here to the Ten Commandments. This is the law of God. God's law, firmly in place within his church. This is long after Jesus Christ sacrificed his life. This is long after the crucifixion of Christ. And notice how James talks about God's law. Down in verse 14, it says, "What does it profit, my brethren, though a man say he have faith and have not works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, Depart in peace, be you warmed and filled, notwithstanding you give them not those things which are needful to the body, what does it profit?" In other words, it's saying, if you just talk about the laws of God and you don't do them, how does anyone benefit from that? Verse 17, it says, "Even so, faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone." So there's two kinds of faith, isn't there? There's the kind described here, dead faith. Faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone. Faith without works is dead. And then there's the other kind, the active, living, dynamic faith of Jesus Christ in us, Galatians 2:20. Continuing on, though, here in James, it says, verse 19, "You believe that there is one God, you do well. The demons also believe and tremble." As I've been saying at the PAC appearances, Satan's not an atheist. Neither are the demons. They are well aware of God's existence. They know all about God's power, God's mighty power. They just won't submit to God's holy law. They're rebellious. They're lawless. They're filled with hate. Verse 20 says, "But will you know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead?" It's nothing more than dead faith. If there's no works to go with it, if we're not doers, it's just dead faith, pure and simple. James gives a couple of powerful examples here to illustrate. Verse 21, "Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he had offered Isaac his son upon the altar? See you how faith wrought with his works, and by works was faith made perfect. And the scripture was fulfilled, which said, Abraham believed God, and it was imputed unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God." You see, Abraham didn't just believe in the existence of God. He acted on what God taught him. This is such an important point to make, because the whole Christian world is deceived on this very point. There's a lot of dead faith in the world. There's little or no action. But if it's living faith, it's coupled with righteous works. Jesus Christ living in us. You follow that example of Abraham, whether it's in Genesis 12, where God told him to leave his homeland, his family, all the comforts of life where he lived, and to go to a strange land, to just get up and go. And it just says in the scriptures that Abraham departed. He obeyed God. He followed God. He followed God's lead. And it's the same when God asked him to sacrifice his son. The scripture relates that he just got up and departed with his son early the next morning. Early, even. There was no resistance. He didn't stop to question God. He didn't stop like most would today and say, "Well, what do you mean? I can't leave this. I can't go do this. You can't honestly expect me to do what you just said I should do." Abraham just did it. Faith with works. He had living, dynamic, active faith. He trusted God. He knew, Hebrews 11 brings this out, he knew that if he sacrificed his son, that God would have to raise him back to life. to fulfill the promises made to Abraham and Isaac. That's living faith. That's trusting God. That's obeying the first and great commandment. That's putting God first. If God says it, we do it. We don't question. We don't stagger faith-wise. We live by faith. That's what Jesus told that young wealthy man. Or the disciples after he went away, sorrowful. Jesus said, with men it's impossible, but with God all things are possible. James 4, the fourth chapter, verse 12, it says, there is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who are you that judges another? Well, that's a pretty sobering verse. There's just the one lawgiver. These laws, these perfect, just, holy, righteous, royal laws, they come from God. And God inspired James to say, who do we think we are? who are we to judge others? It's God who's the chief lawgiver. It's God who's able to save and to destroy. Verse 13 continues, go to now, you that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain, whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life, James asks. Verse 14 says, it's even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. What is our life? This is a point I've also been stressing at the PAX. Just how short our time on this earth is, our time in the flesh. It's compared to a vapor here. Peter compared it to a blade of grass. In the book of Job, our life is compared to a puff of wind. In the Psalms, it's compared to smoke. Steam or smoke that rises up for a short time and then it just disappears. It's over. Job 14 says, man that is born of a woman is of few days and full of trouble. He comes forth like a flower and is cut down. He flees also as a shadow and continues not. He's just like a little shadow. A flower, a blade of grass. The psalmist, chapter 89, remember how short my time is. Wherefore have you made all men in vain? That same psalm, or thereabouts, it talks about our prayer to God being that we ask God to help us to number our days. In other words, to use them wisely. Paul said in Ephesians 5 that we should try to redeem the time or to buy the time. We often talk about spending time or saving time. But Paul actually said, buy it if you can. You really can't. We all have the same allotment every day. But it's so precious, the moments we have, particularly in these last days, we want to make the most of our every opportunity and use our time, spend our time wisely. James says in verse 15, for that you ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. In other words, why get caught up into, well, I'm going to do this and this and this and this, and well, I've got these plans here. It's not that we shouldn't plan or prepare or set goals, but we ought to say, what's God's will? How does God say that we should live? What are God's priorities? This is the way Abraham thought. That's why he had faith with works. What does God want me to do? That's the question. That's the most important question every day. Verse 16, it says, but now you rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore, We take such pride in our boastings, our petty accomplishments. All such rejoicing is evil, it says. And then he says, verse 17, therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. If you know to do good, but you don't do it, it's sin. It's sin. That's a Bible definition of sin. We know about the one in 1 John 3 and verse 4. Sin is the transgression of God's law. Here it says, if you know to do good and you don't do it, it's sin. Paul said in Romans that whatsoever is not of faith is sin. So how ought we to live? Well, listen to these powerful verses. And then do what God says to do. Walk by faith. My father writes in the James booklet, if you know to do something, you must, rather, if you know to not do something, you must not do it. The transgressors are going to die. The Laodiceans know what is right. They know what Mr. Armstrong taught. They seem to be religious, but they're twisting the truth and they know better. A lot of people know better. They know they should be doing things differently in their lives. We've talked to quite a few of them at these PACs over the last 3.5 months. Some are acting. Some others have admitted that's been the one stumbling block or the barrier. I just haven't acted. Well, now is the time to act, and there are certain action steps that you can take. Here in verse 7, James 4, verse 7, it says, submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. If we submit to God, if we resist against our adversary, then we'll begin to claim victories. God will remove those barriers, those hindrances, and we'll be able to run with Christ. We'll be able to walk by faith. But we've got to take action. Verse 8 says, draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Draw near to God. He's not that far away from us, as Paul said to the Athenians. He's actually close if we'll just go after him. But it's our sinful behavior that separates us from God. It's our sins that make God so far away, so distant, so remote. Draw near to God, and he'll draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, sinners. Purify your hearts. Verse 10 says, humble yourselves in the sight of the Eternal, and he shall lift you up. God will lift you up. He'll lift us up if we humble ourselves before him, if we draw near to him. How do you do that? Well, James 5 and verse 16 says, the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. You can study into those English words or the Greek word behind it, effectual fervent. It comes from the Greek word energio. Energy, in other words. This is talking about energetic prayer. Not the lazy, sleepy time prayer, but prayer that's energized. Prayer that is fervent. Prayer that is dynamic. The Living Bible says, the earnest prayer of a righteous man has great power and wonderful results. If you draw near to God this way, he will draw near to you. In our booklet, How to Pray, it says, energetic, heartfelt prayers are well-pleasing to God. When you wholeheartedly call on God, you can expect real answers to your prayers. Why, it asks? Because God is wholehearted. And that type of prayer is helping you to become more like him. Well, there's a few other action steps I guess we could get into, maybe at a later time, but that certainly, hopefully anyway, will get you off and running in the right direction. I hope that you'll have a great day in service to God. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.